Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to a very special Mike Wise show. Since our debut on January 14th, 2019, we've done 101 shows. And this week we have a repeat offender who first appeared on April 22nd, 2019. You know him from ESPN, SiriusXM, NBA Radio. And now he joins Dan Le Batard's pirate ship, anchored on South Beach. But ladies first, so Darlene, do your thing.
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
Thank you again, Darlene. Amin El-Hassan is a force. After working in the Phoenix Suns front office under the previous ownership, he joined ESPN.com. He works for SiriusXM NBA Radio, ESPN. Now he's the top draft pick of the still-to-be-named pirate ship. He's also a Star Wars expert, which I respect more than anything. Welcome, Amin. Welcome back.
Oh, Mike, how's it going, man? I'm really excited. It's a special time in my life, you know. You embark on a new adventure and you don't know if it's quite going to work out, but you kind of don't care. I've likened it to, you know, the people who go bodysuit gliding, right? Like they jump out and they wear these things like flying squirrels, right?
Right.
You know, with little wings, and they jump literally and they're just sailing along in the sky. And I have to imagine, I've never done it, but I have to imagine part of it is exhilarating. Of the feeling, what it feels like to really fly and have freedom. And part of it has to be terrifying because, like, what if I hit a tree here?
Well,
that's
exactly
how I feel.
I remember that my wife is a bachelor devotee. And there was a former guy from a Bachelorette episode that basically died doing that gliding. But, you know, and they said a little RIP for him. And it's like, bottom line is, I think you're going to have a better experience. And I hope you do, or else you won't be a repeat guest. In the future.
So, that's a lot riding. There's a lot riding on it here.
Yeah. So I took a kind of a leap of faith when I left the Washington Post for The Undefeated. It turned out to be for about a year and a half, a very good gamble. And then after that, I wasn't. But either way, this is a big deal. How long were you at ESPN?
8 years.
Yeah, 8 years. That's a long time.
Mike, you know, the craziest thing is I've worked at ESPN longer than I've worked at any other company in my life.
That's great.
It's a weird feeling, though.
Yeah, I know, especially when you're moving around and there's this instability thing. And then you finally got stability and you're taking another leap of faith. This is huge. Exactly. I don't know if it's been defined yet, but what will your new role be under the company that's been formed by former ESPN president John Skipper and a friend of ours, Dan Le Batard?
Yeah, Dan jokes about this a lot, how they don't even know what my role is. To start with, because the company is still trying to figure itself out. You know, it's very hard for me to define myself if the company hasn't defined itself. So to start with, it's going to be a lot of what I've already provided for that show over the years, which is a little bit more frequent now, guest spots, doing NBA analysis for them. A little NBA insider, you know, parlor tricks, if you will, and then shenanigans, participating in the shenanigans. Yeah. And, you know, as the company defines itself and as we start to realize what the opportunities are and expansion happens, because it's going to be bigger than just the show.
Sure.
And, you know, South Beach Sessions, which is Dan's one-on-one sit-down podcast. It's going to be bigger than that. I'm sure that we're going to find other vehicles and avenues that I'm going to be participating in. And really, the sky is the limit. You know, at the end of the day, Mike, the decision wasn't about what am I going to do or even how much am I going to get paid. It's about I'm working with people that I know are creative and take risks and look at things in a different way and aren't afraid to have fun at the expense of themselves, at the expense of others. And that's what I wanted to be a part of more than anything.
I think, Dan, I always see people like, if you don't like it, you don't get the show. And what I've always said about it is, and Dan and I are very similar in this way, is that, you know, there's a certain seriousness in the world of sports now that's so serious. And not just the Sabre metrics and analytics, but it goes deeper than that. It's sort of like trades and firings are treated like, you know, supreme capital insurgents. And, you know, and so it's, there are things to treat very serious, the racism, the Jerry Sandusky type stories, but the rest of it, it's like, it's sports, it's still sports. And that's why we got into this business in the first place, is we didn't have to grow up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Tom Brady, I think said this at a press conference a couple of years ago, like, guys, we're not talking about Syria here, you know? We're talking about, did you check down before? You know, like, it's not that big of a deal. Not something for people to get upset and angry about. And again, that's what I love about working with Dan and working with Stugatz and the rest of the shipping container. You know, the reality is, in sports, as we cover sports, you often talk about the importance of chemistry, and chemistry and culture. Those are two buzzwords everyone likes to bandy about. Coaches, front office people, media people. Chemistry and culture. Do we have a roster of people who get along together professionally? And then B, culture. Do we have a set of standards and kind of a belief system that we all adhere to that allows us to kind of have expectations that are unset at some point, right? That's something that every sports franchise like seeks. They all want great chemistry and a strong culture so that we don't have to explain to people, well, we don't do that around here. You already know it when you walk in the door. That's what Dan does, right? And it's the irony is, Dan once upon a time did not believe in chemistry. Dan was-
He just threw out, oh, that's funny.
Yeah, he was
the guy. Why not? Why not? That's the beauty of the show, and that's the beauty of what he does. Is there's you know, I always say they frequently try to do the copycat thing with TNT and Ernie and Shaq and Charles, and they try. And I even like auditioned to Fox Sports One long ago, and the whole idea was we're going to do this thing with Andy Roddick, and we're going to do this thing with Gary Pants. Like, no, it's the people, and the people have to not like and respect and know each other, and to the point where you can irritate another guy on air, and he can almost laugh at himself. And I think that's what that show does in a lot of ways, like the TNT studio crew does.
Yep, that's an excellent example. TNT is successful, is the gold standard of all sports TV studio shows, right? Why? Two words: chemistry and culture, right? Ernie, Kenny, Charles, Shaq, they all get along. I know Shaq and Charles sometimes get into that little tete-a-tete, but they get along. They're just joshing each other as they would if they were in a real locker room, right?
Yeah.
So the chemistry is unflappable. And then the second half of it, culture. They've created a culture. So Shaq is the new guy, right?
Yes.
You and I are both old enough to remember when it was just Kenny and
I can't believe they've been on for 20 odd years. Yeah. It's insane.
I remember when Charles was the new guy, right?
Yeah.
And now we can't even imagine it without Charles. And then Shaq was the new guy. But the reality is, you know, the culture really was set with Kenny and EJ.
Yeah.
And when Charles came in, look, Charles is just the kind of guy where he's going to fit in almost any social setting he finds himself in, right? But it just so happened that this one was perfect for him, right?
Yeah.
And so at that point, they built the culture. So when Shaq comes aboard, and I've, you know, Shaq played for us at the Suns. I know Shaq very well. I've talked to Shaq professionally. I've talked to Shaq as a friend. I know that he has adapted himself to that show. That if it were up to him, or not up to him, that's not the right way to put it. If the show had started with Shaq, it would be a different show. Mm-hmm. But it's not, because part of it is the parts that appeal to him fit perfectly. And then he's had to kind of adjust somewhat to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what culture does. Culture says, look, we'll bend here, we'll bend there. But at the end of the day, these are our tenets. If you don't fit within this, then there really ain't no place for you, right? And they've had a lot of guys in that poor chair over the years. But Shaq is the guy who's fit. And that's where the chemistry and culture come together. That's how you get a great franchise. That's how you get a great show, whatever it is.
Amin El-Hassan is the guest. And right now, I think the news to come out of this show is that him joining the Levitard Skipper lineup, he has now compared himself to Shaquille O'Neal. And it's a huge thing to fill. And I can't believe, I think it's arrogant of you. And I think, I don't think you should be that sure of yourself this early in the interview. However, I feel like you do.
So here's the best part. If I were Shaq right now sitting in this chair, would we talk about his arrogance? Maybe, but it's part and parcel, right? So if you call me arrogant, I feel like, oh, I'm doing a great Shaq impersonation then. I love you, Diesel. It's all love.
We go back 2 autobiographies ago. Oof. God bless him. It probably that book Shaq Talks Back probably paid for this house.
Well, let me tell you. there's a list of people that I always think about. Shaq's on that list where I'm like, thank you for everything that I have in my life. Oh, Shaq, Steve Nash, Grant Hill, Steve Kerr, David Griffin, Alvin Gentry, Mike D'Antoni. That's the list right there.
Yeah. Before we get to all the league matters, I do want to ask you, and it's easy to bash ESPN, of course, that I don't work there and you don't work there anymore. I don't want to do that as much as I want to say that probably – one of the frustrations Dan shared was a lot of people shared, especially after Jimmy Pitaro took over for John Skipper, was that at a time when there was this, you know, social conscience renaissance in sports and people were, it wasn't like the whole thing was, you know, left-wing social engineers, but the bottom line is there's no world that, you know, stick to sports anymore. That's that genie came out of the bottle a long time ago. And I guess what I'm asking you is, do you feel like you're almost liberated a little bit from a world in which the Norby Williamsons wanted to make it a highlight based thing again, and top 10 lists, and sports is sports. And every now and then, yeah, we'll give you the undefeated because it looks good for us. But I just felt like that, not that they had to cash in on it, but not to cover it. It's just part of sports. And I was wondering from your standpoint, I know that Dan was frustrated with that. Is there also a liberation on your part that I can say some things and talk about some things that I didn't necessarily feel as comfortable about because of the new management?
Yeah, Mike, you know, this is what I'll say. I had 8 great years at ESPN. I really enjoyed working there. I met a lot of great people. You're one of the people I met. Working, if I hadn't worked for ESPN, I don't know if we would ever have met. I read you in the New York Times when I was growing up and I was in high school in New York. So I've always known about you, but I can't call Mike Wise a friend if I don't work for ESPN.
Probably not,
right? So for me, and as I said at the top of the show, 8 years, that's the longest I've worked anywhere. So I'm always going to have fond memories of ESPN. Having said that, I understand how a large publicly traded company will sometimes have a more restricted view of what, how they want the work to get done, right? The beauty, and that's one of the reasons why I left to go be with Dan, because Dan and John Skipper and Stu Gatz and Mike, Billy, Roy, Chris, it's a small company. And I went to, a lot of people don't know this. I have an MBA, went to grad school with, got my MBA. And a lot of our case studies were about the nimbleness of smaller companies and their ability to adapt to changing times, and how that supersedes sometimes companies with much farther resources and larger, right? Because much like a speedboat and a ocean liner, a speedboat can change directions very quickly. An ocean liner, it takes a while, right? It's the reason why the Titanic ran into an iceberg. Because it's hard for the Titanic to swerve, as opposed to a speedboat would have just zipped right around it, right?
Yeah. Now they were going too fast. The captain, I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah. But you know, the point being is, you know, I think about ESPN, and were there times when I wished I could be a little freer? Yes, but at the same time, I have to acknowledge the number of times where I was told, "You can't say that specifically." Either by an editor when I was writing, by a program director when I was doing radio, or by a producer when I was doing TV was extremely limited, right? I always felt I could say what I wanted to say. Now, part of it might be self-censorship on my part. You know, you read the room, you're like, well,
yeah,
maybe this doesn't feel like something that's very appreciated right now in the company, so I'll steer away from it. Maybe I did that subconsciously. But I'm going to say that while, yes, I'm excited to be part of Dan's pirate ship and where we can say whatever we want to say and tweet whatever we want to tweet, I also have to acknowledge that the number of times I felt restricted, like overtly restricted, I want to say this. No, you can't say that. They're extremely limited. I'm not going to say it never happened, but it wasn't like a constant thing.
Oh, I've been there. Yeah, I've been there. And even at where the undefeated, you think we would get more of a leash, and we were pulled in a lot. And that's just, you're right. Publicly traded company. All of a sudden you have people resign, you know, all the people cutting off their subscriptions because Jemele Hill calls the president a racist, which in hindsight was pretty much, she was prescient, but yeah.
And also, I don't think many people cut off their subscriptions. Like that's another story. Like to me, how much of this actually impacted the bottom line, like because of social issues. I've always, when I first started ESPN, Mike.
Yeah.
I walked in and I said, I remember you did the car wash. I don't know if you did the car wash.
Yeah, I did the car wash.
All right. So I walked in and I said, they asked me like, oh, what is your vision or whatever? So, well, television is dying. Like it's going the way of the newspaper. And so I'm trying to figure out what's next and to be on the cutting edge of that. And everyone was like, what? And I was like, this is 8 years ago. I'm like, yeah, like people are not going to continue subscribing to cable. And more importantly, people are not going to continue to wait until 6 o'clock for you to tell them what happened in the world, or 11 o'clock, what happened in the sports world. We're all getting our highlights on Twitter or on Instagram or on YouTube. People are no longer subjected to the rigors and the restrictions of linear television. If I want to know what happened, Kemba Walker came back today for the Celtics. We're recording this on Sunday, January 17th, right? Kemba Walker came back for the Celtics today, and the Knicks blew him out anyway by like 30 points, right? I'm not waiting until 11 p.m. Eastern to watch SportsCenter. Well, how did that happen? How did Kemba look? Well, how did the Knicks? No,
you looked at your phone twice.
A million times and seen every clip, every highlight of who did what and how Kemba looked and analysis. And I've read analysis from different people on the internet. And maybe there are people who tweeted clips and see how Kemba's moving here. And I'm so much more informed about the game than everyone who's waiting until 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that I am representative of the entire population of the United States? Absolutely not. There's a good deal of people who are still getting their news, waiting for the 11 o'clock news, the 11 o'clock Sports Center, right? But there's a growing population of people who don't, right? And so within that regard, I've always felt like, you know, what's the future going to look like? The future is going to look like a lot of on-demand programming, unless it's breaking news right now, right? If OJ is going down the 405, or excuse me, AC is driving down the 405 with OJ in the back, yes, we're all tuning into that, right? But if it's, hey, this happened, Harden got traded a few days ago, I'm not waiting for SportsCenter or Undisputed or First Take or any of these shows. I'm going to my phone and getting all this analysis like right away.
Yeah. Oh no. And when our country's falling apart, you don't wait for the CNN broadcast. You're looking at Twitter. You're looking at Facebook. You're looking at all these social media outlets that have live streaming of the craziness. And then maybe you're looking for perspective and larger things later. But I feel like you're right. I think this my biggest thing about the media today. Not only is it advocacy journalism has replaced real journalism in many ways, but in some ways there's some things strategically that is smart to be advocating and morally right to be advocating, and I have no problem with some of it. Of course, when people advocate the wrong things, I want them drawn and quartered,
and that's the hard part, right? The hard part is there's no gatekeeper. It's all out there. And so it's up to us as consumers to figure out what's real, what's not, what's good, what's not, what's well done journalism, and what is, even if it supports something that you believe, shoddy journalism, like, or, right, or biased journalism. We have to do that. We have to get more educated as a people. But I'll never forget, Mike, I'm curious to hear your answer to this. Yeah. Do you remember the first thing, the first real news item you ever learned via Twitter and not like from a traditional media source?
Ooh, I man, did. I want to say, and because I was such a big fan growing up, I now have different feelings about him having watched the documentary, but I want to say the first time that Twitter really, it was the first time that big news came into my life was Michael Jackson's death. The death, wow, of Michael Jackson in 2009.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember it because I was in California. I almost, sadly enough, I was going to go where the mourners were, but I was so blown away by it at 50 years old. And I was just, I couldn't believe it. But I remember it came via Twitter because Twitter, they had picked up TMZ's report, and TMZ, that's where, right, believe it or not, that's where, yeah, they made their bones, was they got, yep, someone in the hospital to tell him he was dead before anybody, yep, knew. And so, yep, TMZ how about broke you? That one, yeah.
For me, it was Bin Laden. I remember being on Twitter that night.
About a year, yeah, later.
Yep. I remember being on Twitter and people saying they got Bin Laden. And I was like, what? And then I said, I never forget, because I turned on CNN. Nothing. MSNBC, nothing. Fox, nothing. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, no, this must be some silly Twitter rumor, because Twitter was still young and it's in infancy. There's no way they got this right. And then I remember, I can't remember what channel I was watching, but they interrupted the program for a special address from the President of the United States. And I remember Obama walking from inside the White House, that long ass red carpet, to the podium. And he had this cool ass stroll. And he got to the podium, and he said, several hours ago, members of SEAL Team 6
apprehended.
He did that, and I wish I had the exact quote in front of me, but he's saying, like, he's
not going to say that. That was almost a Jordan Peele Obama.
My Obama's pretty good. I always tell Sasha, Malia, Michelle, that Mike Wise is one of my favorite New York Times columnists, writers. But the reality was, like, he's talking and I'm like, he's not about to say this. This isn't really good. Is he going to say it? And then he said, yeah, we got Bin Laden. And I was like, that's insane, because I knew this about 40 minutes ago from Twitter of all places. It wasn't because ABC News tweeted it. It was just like regular people tweeting, they got Bin Laden, they got Bin Laden. And so that was the moment for me. And I know that's still ahead of the curve for most of the regular population, but it's like, that was the moment for me, all of that changed. Yep. Like, this is a different world that we're living in, where not even the serious news is coming to us from our gatekeepers of cable news networks or the Dan Rathers of the world or whatever. We're getting it from our phones, from this thing in our pocket.
I completely agree with you. As you know, our guest is Amin El Hassan, the third most famous person who was born in Sudan that ended up working in the NBA. The first two, of course, were Manute Bol and Bol Bol. Bol was born over here. What am I talking about?
No. I know Bol Bol was born in Sudan.
He was.
But I'm going to say I'm third. Bol Bol is fourth. Second, though, is Luol Deng.
What am I thinking? Luol Deng.
Luol Deng is second. And by the way, if we really want to get technical, the actor Alexander Siddig is probably on the list there somewhere. Although I'm not sure if he was born in.
I mean, the fact that I even, like, you'd have to tell me a movie he was in.
Let me tell you this. He was in Star Trek: The Next Generation. He's on that show for a while, but he was on Game of Thrones. Prince Oberlin's father. Remember the father?
He died with him.
That's Alexander Siddig.
Okay. All right, I'll give him some. All right, I'll give him some love. I don't think he's as well known.
He's one of those guys where I say his name, you don't know who he is. Yeah. But if I show you a picture, or you watched his movie, you're like, yeah, that's a guy from Syriana, and that's the guy. He's in a lot of stuff. But he's always playing kind of like a vaguely Middle Eastern character. So,
oh man! All right. So, one of your buddies, Steve Nash, is the Nets mortgage their future. I on one level, it's almost like you're blessed with so much talent, and so many coaches tell you don't go anywhere with talent. What could possibly go wrong? But I also think that Steve Nash, in some ways, the way he teaches the game, the way he thinks of it, he kind of has to eat a shit sandwich a little bit right here. He has to be the guy that molds the, you know, he has to be the Phil Jackson, essentially the guy that molds some of the greatest players of their generation and find a way so they can work together and have chemistry on the court. Thoughts on the Nets?
Well, Mike, I would say this. When rumors first emerged of James Harden's desire to be a Brooklyn Net back in November or whenever it was, I was very adamant, like, this, that's not going to work. That's not a good idea for many of the same reasons that you just kind of outlined, because it's only one basketball. It's three of the most ball-dominant players in the history of the NBA, right? And two of them fled situations that were a very ball-movement-friendly area, like Kyrie from Boston. That's a very move the ball around, everyone gets to eat thing. And he wasn't happy because he wanted to be in control. Kevin Durant was winning championships in Golden State, a very egalitarian offense. And he was like, you know what? I know I came here because I hated, you know, being an ISO player in Oklahoma City, but I kind of miss ISOs now, right? So part of me was like, yeah, like you fled this. Now you're going to have to readapt to it all over again. I just don't see that happening. But what's happened over the last, I guess now coming on 2 weeks, has changed my opinion in this way. With Kyrie Irving's erratic behavior, whatever the reason is, however legitimate the reason is, no matter how big of a Kyrie proponent you are, you have to accept something. He's not here right now.
This is true. Right? This is true.
And it happened now. It could happen again. Because it's not like crazy things don't happen anymore. That was the last crazy thing last Wednesday or two Wednesdays ago. Yeah, no, it could happen again. And who knows what will set him off or trigger him. And again, I am not sitting here in judgment of what makes that man say, I need some time away.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, man, God bless you. I hope you figure it out. But the reality is, in the meantime, we don't pause. Life goes on in Brooklyn and all the across the NBA. And Steve Nash and Sean Marks and Kevin Durant all have to continue to figure out, okay, what do we do now? Because he's not here.
Yes.
So acquiring James Harden.
It's almost like it's Kyrie insurance.
It's Kyrie insurance that you already cashed in. Because at this point, it ain't like, when's Kyrie coming back? It's, hey, man, so we're leaving. If you're coming, come on. We're leaving. We're leaving. Right. We got our guys.
You can make an argument that Kyrie has always been gone. It's just a matter of how he performs on the court.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, whether it's injury or whatever he's dealing with. But at the end of the day, they went out and got a guy just as good as Kyrie, if not better.
Yeah.
I should say he is better, because not only has he been an MVP in this league, but he's been top five in MVP voting many, many times. And I think at that point, you have to acknowledge, yeah, that's a really, really, really good player, right? That's one of the best players in the league. So now, instead of me trying to figure out, okay, how do Kyrie, Kevin Durant, and Harden fit? I'm like, well, how do Harden and KD fit? And I watched that game, their first game against Orlando. It fit pretty well. I'm going to tell you right now. They fit pretty well. Now, do they have question marks? Absolutely. They got to figure out the defensive element.
Yeah.
Not good enough.
There's something about them where it's not so much the sublime choreography of teamwork with them, but there's almost like it's a baton handing off. Like, oh, I just hit three or four. I feel it. But you know what? You're ready to go on a streak now. And it's almost like they're handing off the ball. It's almost like, you know what it's like to be in a zone. Two of the great streak shooters. Yeah. And getting his own players of all time. And they almost understand that intuitively about each other. And I think, I think you're right.
This is what I'll say. I watched that game against Orlando, and the takeaway, now again, that was one game. Maybe next game, it looks a lot more disjointed. But one, Harden had the ball in his hands a lot, and Durant seemed content with that. Two, Harden ended up with a 30-point triple-double, which is really nice. And that was the main story. Durant ended up with 40-plus points. And it became an afterthought.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the part where it gets easy, right? Where you can be doing all this stuff, and it's just like, it's so much less pressure because the way Harden plays, I think it's just them two is a great fit. Now the problem is you add a third dude, and now all the freedom and space get constricted. And I'll never forget this. Mike D'Antoni has a saying a lot of times. He'll say it in practice. Like, if we're running a set, like, okay, you throw it to him, and then you down screen over there, and then you come off and on a dribble handoff right here. And then he'll say, and now we're just playing basketball. Meaning, you guys are all smart. You know how the reads. If the defense playing this way, then you dive, and he's going to hit you. If they're sagging back, then you pop. He'll hit you here. If they're kind of playing in between, then that means the guy over there is open. Skip pass. Make sure you're filled in the corner. I don't need to tell you guys this. You've played basketball your whole lives. You know how to play. Harden and Durant, not only have they played together, obviously that helps, but it was last night. They're playing basketball. Like, okay, we're going to run a pick and roll, and then this guy's going to dive. And now, depending on what the defense does, I read it, you read it, we're both smart guys, and we'll figure all that out. That's a lot easier to do with two stars and a bunch of role players than it is with three stars and a bunch of role players.
You're completely right, and there's so much in there you could get to, but the main thing is it's, you know, two of the most talented players in the history of the league. Frank Isola and I, who a friend of ours that you know as well, we used to, when we were covering the Knicks back in the day, we would always come up with back pages. And of course, we always wanted John Crotty to be joining the Knicks and be cut by them, because the back page would have been Crotty chopped. You like that? So what happens is in the neural cortex in my brain, just like you remember Star Wars lines, I think of like back pages. And I thought, when KD, Harden, and Kyrie got together, I had some possible big three nicknames. I want you to tell me which one you like the best. The three enigmas, the feared, the beard, and the weird, the foundation, the unshaven, and the misbehaving, Tres Locos, the Durantula, the deep threat, and the diva, and my favorite personally, Brooklyn Mine Mine.
Okay, all right, hold on. Brooklyn Mine Mine is definitely number one.
All right, good. I'm glad you like it. Yes. Brooklyn Mine Mine, okay, very good.
The beard, and the weird is very strong. That was my number one until Brooklyn Mine Mine came up. The three enigmas only works for me if they Photoshop the sombreros and
the three bandoliers.
Yeah. Like, you got to have them looking like, you know, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, and Martin Short. Then I'll take the three enigmas. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I can't come up with a better one than any of those.
You need is like five minutes.
Yeah, but like, you know, at some point, like, it'll be three's a crowd.
Yeah.
When Kyrie comes back and it falters for a couple of games, it'll turn into three's a crowd. And so-and-so says S-E-Z, by the way. They save a letter there. Instead of spelling it S-A-Y-S, they go S-E-Z. Says not enough airspace for three guys to be out there. So no, look, Brooklyn Mine Mine, that's a strong one. It's right up there with Justin Termini from SiriusXM Radio, who came up with this, and Charles Barkley lifted it and did it on air. Yeah. He said, Kevin Durant went from playing with the Splash Brothers to playing with the Dribble Brothers. That's pretty strong.
The Dribble, right. Oh, yeah. There'll be a lot of shot clocks dribbled out in the lives of those two players. Look, I'm one of these people that, even though I covered Jordan in his prime, and there'll be nothing that I believe cover that is as spectacular, and almost like, there were times when I would write an early lead for the New York Times just to make sure I got my story in on time for whatever the Bangladesh edition, and I would write something about Jordan winning the game, and by and large it held up most of the time.
You were just taking a leap of faith.
Yeah, I would take a leap of faith, and I would, well, the one of the editors was sort of like, what, do switch leads, like, right, Michael Jordan and the Bulls win, or my Utah and the Jazz win, and I would have these real, you know, basic formula things, and then put on the background at the end. But the bottom line is, Michael Jordan, awesome, by and large, would come true. It was like a video game for many of them. And boy, Ben, if LeBron James wins one or two more titles, and he beats a team like Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant in the finals. And obviously AD could easily be the MVP of that series, but man, I got to start looking at, I got to start putting him, you know, like if he's not the greatest player of all time, and I know these Superman, Batman arguments go on forever, I think he's got to be there. I mean, how do you keep LeBron out of that conversation just because you don't like a press conference he did 10 years ago?
Now, Mike, you're older than me, so you remember this a lot clearer than I do.
Yeah.
But I remember when I thought Michael Jordan was the greatest player ever and no one would ever come close. And people older than me were like, what? Magic Johnson went to the finals almost every year of his career.
Yeah, Bird.
How could you say that? And I would, someone older would be like, what? Let me tell you what Oscar Robertson was doing.
Yeah.
And so every generation has their guy who they say unequivocally, this is the best player of all time. And you're nuts if you think this guy, oh, the league is so easy now. The league is so easy now is something that's always, you know, Jordan didn't even play against anybody. Magic had to beat Bird, and he had to beat, like they list all the great teams that they had to play against, right? And then Jordan comes, and then it's like, Jordan, this guy, like, oh, you know, how could you even say that anyone's better than Jordan? LeBron, he had to team up with this or that, whatever. And so I'm of the school of thought that there is no such thing as the greatest player of all time. There are great players. There are players who definitely are greater than others, right? I feel very confident when I say LeBron James is in a different category than Clyde Drexler or Charles Barkley or Karl Malone, right? Who are great, great Hall of Fame, top 50 of all time players, right?
Probably top 20. Yeah.
But I'm just saying officially known as top 50 of all time players.
Right.
But LeBron's better than that.
Yeah.
I don't leave sleep over that. But at the end of the day, it all comes into like these crusts, right? I would say Magic, Kareem, Michael, LeBron, Oscar, Wilt and Russell, those guys all bring a greatness to the table that you, depending on what you value, you might put this guy ahead of this one, or you might put that guy ahead of this one. And then there's a gap. And then the next crust is like Shaq, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant, Rick Barry.
Yeah, Bird wasn't in the conversation in that Bird first one. Bird's on my Mount Rushmore. Specifically because I'm a Caucasian. And no, I'm kidding. I saw the Bird Magic rivalries, and it was sort of like Bird and Magic were the last guy. I like both of them very much growing up, and they were the last posters I kind of took off my wall as a kid. In college? And I was like, you know what? If I'm gonna do this, I can't be enamored by these guys so much. But I look at, I don't know, I see Bird, maybe, you know what, Bird, Oscar, Kobe, all those guys. Like, I think you're right about, well, Kareem. I like Kareem, man. I love Kareem.
Well, Kareem, like, it is what I always
say.
I might
put him as my top center of all time.
LeBron faced the most, like, had to answer to the highest stakes.
Yes.
The only other player in history who had to deal with it like that was Kareem. In terms of Kareem, when he was an eighth grader, everyone said, this guy's going to be the best ever. And so to have to answer to that at Power Memorial, at UCLA, at Milwaukee, at Los Angeles,
that's like, great. That's
at every great turn, he had to answer that bell in the same way that LeBron did starting when he beat Lenny Cook in the ABCD camp, right? That
Lenny
moment
Cook,
start.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good, that that's moment. A, that's a pull.
I mean, look, but that's the moment LeBron became a thing. Before that, he was just some kid from Hicktown, Ohio. mm-hmm. right? And all the best players come from California, Chicago, or New York. And don't tell us about no Hicks from Ohio. And he changed right. that. But at the same time, you know, it's funny. We talk about Bird and Magic. They were contemporaries, their peers. Yeah, Bird definitely should have been in that first tier. And I apologize for that. But I always, the thing that made me think is that I know plenty of players who have played against Magic and played against Bird. And this isn't a measure of who's a better player, but probably by a 5-to-1 or 6-to-1 ratio, I have so many more stories I've heard about, man, we were playing Bird and this happened, than I do about Magic. It's not about the greatness of, oh, he dropped 40 on us, whatever. It's things like Bird shot left-handed the entire game.
I know.
Bird, my favorite one to this day, this is the best trash talk I've ever heard in my entire life, Mike. And Dennis Rodman told this story. He said, this is Dennis Rodman, all defensive team Dennis Rodman, when the Pistons are great or whatever. Said he's guarding Larry Bird. And Larry Bird just decided that day that he was going to ignore Dennis. And by ignore, I mean he was yelling at his teammates, they're not guarding me. They're playing 4-on-5 and they're leaving me open. Pass me the ball wide open. And Dennis is draped over him. Like, what is he talking about? Come on, go give me the ball. Give me the ball. And then it's like, he turned and looked at Chuck Daly. And said, Chuck, you're not going to have a fifth guy on the floor. He's just going to leave me all wide open. I've been all-star and all-NBA.
I haven't heard that story. That's tremendous.
And Dennis Rodman's looking around like, is this guy insane? And so then they pass Bird the ball. And like, Dennis is all over him like a cheap suit. And like the ball barely touches Larry's hands. I mean, it's in his hands. It's up. It goes in. I said, who would have thunk it? They left me, Larry Bird, wide open, right? And so the game goes on. And even when he misses shots, he's loudly apologizing to his teammates. Guys, I'm sorry. I'm wide open. I have to hit those. I apologize. And Dennis Rodman, I've never felt more demoralized in my life.
I didn't acknowledge him.
I mean, but that's like, there's a million Larry Bird stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's, you know, that's part of what makes him special. It's the idea that, like, this dude wasn't just great. He was great, and he let you know about it.
Yeah. Right? No, he's one of the great trash talkers, one of the great gamesmen, you know, ship of all times. The one thing about the league that, and it's hard for me, I loved the playoffs last year. I didn't think I would. I was kind of the opinion that, look, we can't even get our kids back in school. Why is sports going on? Right. But the NBA did it right. Now you're traveling. You have people that are in the COVID protocol. Mm-hmm. I know it's part of our world. And I still, maybe because it's the regular season, it's hard for me to watch games like I used to without anybody in the stands. And even when they're rolling in crowd noise and whatever, that's every sport. But the NBA, I love going to a game.
It's intimate. It's an intimate environment. Yeah. It's unlike any other sport. No other sport is as intimate as the NBA. That's why our stars are more recognizable than the NFL stars, the baseball stars. But that hurts us more when it comes to lack of spectators, right? You can feel a lack of crowd at an NBA game in a way that at a football game you really don't feel.
Yeah, in so many ways. Barkley mentioned the other night, kind of irresponsibly, but you know, it's Charles, on the broadcast. It's sort of like, hey, if they're going to get this league to work this year, we need to get the players vaccinated, all the players. And Kenny's, Kenny, of course, is like, well, Charles, you got to get the frontline workers and the elderly. No, you got to get them. And I'm thinking, it's crazy. But on one level, the NBA, I never thought took enough grief for essentially, they were testing their players every day back when there wasn't enough COVID tests for regular society. Right. And so there's a part of me like, Adam Silver's not that tone deaf. And I think there's a real danger here. You have to get a hold of this. Don't you believe you have to get a hold of this COVID problem, whether you have to shut down the season for 10 games or whatever, you have to get a hold of it, or else you're going to look like, any other sports league that doesn't give a crap about anybody but themselves.
Right. I'm going to say there's a couple of things. One is the NBA entered this season knowing this was going to happen at some point. This isn't like, oh my God, all these guys have gone. Oh no, they knew we're going to go through a stretch in this year where a bunch of guys are unavailable due to COVID protocol violation, right? Whether it's contact tracing, whether it's outright positive tests, whatever it is. The other thing is, if you look at the nation, right? Not sports, but the nation. We have COVID spikes a few weeks after a major holiday. So the first big spike after the original, like when we went into lockdown, everyone would stay at home.
Yeah.
Right. The first big spike happened after Memorial Day by about 2 or 3 weeks. More they happened 2 or 3 weeks later. Oh, the numbers went back up after it'd been going down steadily. Why? Because people got together and said, it's Memorial Day. How can we, you know, how can I say no? And then it kind of stabilized a little bit. And then we got another spike a few weeks after July 4th. And that's been the rhythms, right? And so the league, not only did they know it would happen, but they had to know, by the way, you've got Christmas, Thanksgiving, the holiday season, families coming by, people getting together, you're going to have a spike. And that's several weeks removed. That's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing the spikes of the holiday season happen. And in a very super cynical, the money is the money way, the NBA is behaving like, if we could just ride this spike out, it'll normalize again. And all we have to do then is hold on. All we got to do is hold on until the vaccines hit us, right? Right now, frontline workers, I'm with Kenny. Make no mistake. The people who need it the most, people who work in hospitals because they're facing it every day, and the immunocompromised, whether it's the elderly or, you know, people who have, you know, severe immunodeficiency kind of type of conditions. And then we'll figure out the rest of us after that. But as we work through these batches, as more batches of this vaccination become available, once we get past those two major groups, guess what? That's when the rich people come in, like Charles.
Right.
And they're going to cut lines, right? There's going to be a black market or whatever you want to call it. They're going to cut lines.
The extra doses at somebody's office and they'll figure out a way.
Because right now the projection is by May or June, general populace should be eligible to get it. That means they're going to be enough. Just means that you don't have to show that you're a frontline worker or a you know, someone immunocompromised, right? You can be a regular person. If they got them, you'll be able to get them by May or June, which to me means like, okay, so they're going to start cutting the line probably by late March, early April. Well, we have a break in March. So what the NBA is doing right now is like, we can just hold on, just ride this out, make sure we keep enforcing the protocols, keep enforcing the education, like guys try to, you know, finding Kyrie Irving, finding James Harden, these things, making examples of guys who break it so that the players will ultimately just be responsible enough. Like, look, I'm not going out. Look, I'm not expanding my bubble of people I interact with until we get to a point where vaccinations are available for them. And then I think we'll smooth sail. I think by the time we have the finals, Mike, we will have fans in the stands and we will have media in there.
Oh, your lips to God and Allah and the creator's ears, my friend. I mean, that would be awesome. I've said that too. I think Bruce Bernstein, my producer, and I got it. We were predictions, and I said by the playoffs, I don't know that. I don't think that anymore. But I think by the finals, I think you're right. I think they'll find a way to get the fans back in the stands, and that'd be awesome. No. That would be awesome.
It'll be something weird, like you have to prove you've been vaccinated or something like that. Like it won't be just like first come, first serve, but I think we'll be there.
All right, couple more. I want to go into some word association with you for a minute, but I also really want to I want to bring up this thing that Bruce Bernstein sent me. I don't did you see it yesterday at all about the Star Wars
Bill Burr,
Bill Burr, and he makes a point, and you know it's a somewhat good point. I don't know, but his point was that somehow he fired back at Star Wars fans who say they've never heard a Boston accent in outer space. And his response was, F those nerdy nitpicking nerds. Your thoughts?
He's absolutely right. Now I'm biased because I like Bill Burr. I enjoy his comedy a lot, but I am definitely a bigger Star Wars fan than I am a Bill Burr fan, but he's right. There's no such thing in any of this. Like the point
it's science fiction.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's like, oh wait, Boston accents don't exist, but English does. right. Like that's how ridiculous that. And
I'm from nowhere.
More importantly, Bill Burr's character, he did one episode in season one and one episode in season two. In season one, he was Bill Burr. He's a dick and he makes fun of the guy. And then, you know, he's an easy heel. Right. But the episode he did in season two was just so textured and layered. And it's based on some really deep Star Wars canon, right? When he's talking about Operation Cinder, that's a real thing in Star Wars canon about the protocols that the Empire put in should the Emperor die, right? Yes. And so he plays a former Imperial sharpshooter. And he's sitting there right across from a guy who executed this Operation Cinder to the letter. And part of that included killing your own people. And he's like, those are people that I served alongside, good men and women, good soldiers. For what? For what? What do we do it for? And that's when you realize, you know, hey, just because it's an order doesn't mean it's necessarily good or right, right? And good soldiers follow orders, but that doesn't necessarily always mean that that's the best or right thing. And now he's a guy who's kind of, he's left the Imperial Army and he's doing his own thing as kind of like a bounty hunter or, you know, just as a mercenary.
I think he's doing great work.
But he's thinking to himself, like, what did I watched my friends die for what? And so he played it perfectly. And so to watch this really great act, it wasn't funny. He wasn't being a comedian. He wasn't being Bill Burr. That was an actor acting his ass off, right? Anyone to sit there and dismiss it. But he's got a Boston accent. Who gives a fuck? Why do you care? Right? Like, I mean, Luke sounds like a whiny kid from the valley, right? And totally. And Tarkin sounds like, hey, here's one. Anakin Skywalker sounds like a whiny kid from the valley. And then he puts on a mask and all of a sudden he sounds like a black man who has a faintly British accent. Like that didn't throw you off at all, but like Bill Burr's consistent Boston accent did. Come on.
Apology accepted, Captain Nita.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's tremendous. I'm with you. And did you, the line, you said I messed up the words the last time that, I was on and I spoke of the I am your father part.
Yeah, he never says.
Yeah,
he says. Oh, the line is, Obi-Wan never told you about your father.
Yes,
he says, he told me enough. He told me you killed him. He says, no, I am your father. He never says, Luke, I am your father.
Oh,
which is what people
you're right.
Run
yeah.
say, Luke, I am your father. He never says
Obi-Wan never told you about your father.
Yeah, What happened to your father? He told me enough. He told me you killed him. No, I am your father. There's the line in Return of the Jedi where Luke says like Anakin Skywalker and Vader gets pissed. He says, that name has no meaning to me. Like he gets upset that you would bring up that name. It's like calling your dad by his first name. No, you're not allowed to do that. You gotta call him dad.
Once again, I've been working on my Yoda. Let me know what you think here.
There we go.
Looking awesome, what you have, I would say.
Mm. Yeah. You need a little bit more. Like there's a guttural kind of.
Right?
Yes.
Yours is better.
That is why you fail. That's. Oh, you know what Yoda is? You know what Yoda is? Listen to a lot of Fozzie Bear. It's Frank Oz.
It is Fozzie Bear. Because it's Oz. Bear. It's the Oz puppets.
Yep. Yep.
Take your toy in my will.
Yeah. Mm. Waka waka waka. Like you just
you
it's
see,
the
you
same
see
guy.
Waka waka. Jedi Master. It's,
the only difference is Fozzie Bear speaks in regular diction. And Yoda does the I'm going to put the first part last and the last part first thing. That's the only difference. If you do, you listen to a lot of Fozzie Bear, you'll get Yoda.
You get Yoda. All right, good. All right, my last segment with Amin El Hassan, who's been great. And I love listening to his takes. And I what I'm going to look forward to, too, with Dan Lebatard and you guys is I don't feel like you deal in breaking news at all. I feel like, and you've, this is one of the reasons why I like you as a person. As much as a colleague is, you deal with breaking perspectives. You take what is in front of you and you project what's really going on here. And I think that's a gift. And I think you're going to take that to him and that and the new company. And I'm really going to look forward to that in many ways. And I think Dan has a lot of that in him too, where he can look at a small window and all of a sudden, boom, see something so much larger in that one thing. And to me, that's the best sports writing, the best podcasting, the best broadcasting is really to take that small thing and take it to the next level. And so I'm a big fan before I'm a colleague of yours. I want you to know that.
Yeah, you know, Mike, news breaking is it's a fleeting pleasure, right? The reality is, if I ask you right now, who broke the news that, let me think of a good one. Who broke the news that Andrew Wiggins was going to be the number one overall pick in 2014? Do you remember?
I have no idea. It could have been. Have no I would say it's Shams or Woj since okay. They've got an unholy alliance with every NBA agent in the world. But that's just my opinion.
That's just what you would call a quote unquote educated guess, right?
Right.
But you don't know.
No, I don't know. I have no idea. Care.
So as we see, exactly, does it matter?
Right.
It doesn't matter. So one of the big fundamental things that I think our entire industry has a problem with is that we put value on something that has no value, and not no value in a good way, but has no value in a bad way. It is. Which is transactions, right? I always say this. Paul George got traded for 7 million first-round picks to the Clippers, and nobody knew about it until the news broke, right? Until they announced, right? Like, we didn't even know he was on the block, right? So I always say this. If there were a world with no newsbreakers, no Shams, no Mark Stein, none of those guys, no Chris Haynes, how would you know that Paul George got traded?
His Twitter account, his Instagram
right.
page.
Let's assume
you're right. Who,
let's
who
assume,
would, yeah.
Like, let, so let's assume the player.
The team will put out a press release.
The team will put out a press release. Exactly. Okay. Let's assume this crazy genie who has created this fictional world, who has done away with players allowing to tweet themselves and done away with press releases and done away with newsbreakers. How would you know that Paul George got traded to the Clippers?
You wouldn't.
No, you would. There's one unequivocal way you would know.
He would show up on the court at training.
He'd be wearing a Clippers fucking jersey. You said, how did he get there? Oh my God, he's a Clipper? That's how you would know. So if you literally just wait long enough, you'd find out sooner or later.
Right.
Guess what? That ain't news.
That's trivia.
That's trivia, right? News is something that if we sat here a million years, we'd have never known. Woodward and Bernstein broke news.
Yes.
Not for their efforts, Nixon would have had another term and we would have just gone on with life.
Sure, the reporters who broke the Flint water story broke news.
That's news.
It infected social policy, it got people fired, it helped actually stop the lead poisoning going on.
And let me just say, I don't want to make it seem like it has to be something earth-changing like the presidency or poisoned water, right? My buddy Ethan Strauss wrote an article for ESPN.com when he worked for ESPN that to this day is the most read article in the history of ESPN.com. More than Brady Deflategate, more than LeBron going to Miami.
Was it the Steph Curry story about the shoes?
Wow. About Nike dropping the ball.
Wow.
And how it ended up at Under Armour. And the reality is, if Ethan doesn't write that story, we just think, oh, he switched sneakers.
I remember that because there was this great great anecdote about Doe Curry and Doe. They walk into Nike and the Beaverton store, wherever they're, and the presentation's a joke, and they misspelled his name.
They mispronounced his name.
Yeah.
And then one of the slides, they hadn't updated because it was the same pitch that they gave some other guy. So I had some other guy's name on it. So again, these are things that Ethan had to dig to find out, to report, to write about. And if he doesn't, we never know about it.
Yeah.
That, ladies and gentlemen, that's news. Yeah. Who got signed, who got traded, who got drafted is trivia. You know why? Because if you found out from him, 2 seconds later, he or she tweeted it too. It doesn't fucking matter who broke it. Yeah. So you're in this arms race, and you know there's only one entity out of all the entities, Fox, ESPN, Bleacher Report, Turner Sports, Yahoo Sports, like whatever you want. There's only one entity that benefits from the news breakers consistently, time after time. There's only one entity that should value each one of these mega news breakers for tens of millions of dollars. You know who it is?
Go.
The entity that doesn't have to pay a dime, Twitter.
Twitter. I say this daily. My wife even gives me grief. I'll be tweeting something and she'll go, honey, you don't work for Jack at Twitter. You're like, why are you giving away your content to these people that essentially they're raising their ad rates because you just gave them something? Like, are you out of your mind? Like, you don't work for Facebook. You know, that's so true.
Zuckerberg loves you.
Yeah.
These people love you
because
what you're doing is you are perpetuating, training the reader that, hey, if you want to know when Paul George gets traded, this is the place. You don't want to be dicking around.
Oh,
ESPN.com. Why are you wasting your time with that? Yeah. Here. This is where it's going
to
be.
Oh, you want to know when Betty Davis dies, you go to Twitter. It's crazy. All right. Go ahead. I cut you off.
No. So, to me, that's the biggest problem with our industry. Is that it feels like at this point they haven't figured that out, that they're being gamed by the social media companies because they're creating free content to them that drives eyeballs to the social media companies, not to their websites, not to their TV stations, and not to their podcasts.
Not only that, there are people with massive followings now that are the editors and news organization managers are making hires based on your followings. I know a guy at the Undefeated. I'm not gonna tell you his name. He bought followers. He got a bunch of bots so he could have more followers. You know, he didn't pay a lot of money for them, but I found out. And so, like, my thing is this: how much?
I'll tell you that Justin Tinsley despicable, isn't he?
he's old school. He's actually
Justin's my guy.
He's the best. All right. Word association. I'll let you go here. I'm going to just go with things. You could use one or you could use a sentence, but this is Amin al-Hassan's way to tell how he really feels about different people. Okay. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Underappreciated. Am I going one word or can I go?
You can go. Yeah, you can go.
Okay. This happens a lot in our league where people have real flaws. It's not a made up flaw, but somehow we fall in love with talking about the flaw and kind of forget like how good the person is, right? The player is. Obviously he's a great person, but I'm just talking from a player's side, but the guy's amazing. Mm. He can't shoot. I get it. Right now, if he continues with his non-shooting ass for the rest of his career, he's a Hall of Famer, first ballot. So while I would like him to be a better shooter, like, let's not get it twisted like he's some bum.
Yeah, I agree. Jeff Van Gundy always said, you know, why don't you guys start focusing on what players can do as opposed to what they can't do? you know, and he'd say that about Patrick Ewing all the time.
Yeah, and, like, then Jeff got in the media.
And then Jeff got in the media and he just started killing everybody. Yeah. Why doesn't he do that? All right. Adam Silver.
The best commissioner in sports, perhaps the best commissioner of all time, although I will say that I think David Stern was the right commissioner for what the NBA needed when David Stern came along, and Adam Silver is the right commissioner right now. I don't think I would want David Stern in charge of the, God rest his soul, but if he were alive and in his prime, I think I'd rather have Adam right now than David. But 30 years ago, I would have rather had David than Adam. Mm.
Kyrie Irving.
Unreliable. And I'm going to say unreliable without judgment. He's going through stuff. He's not going. I don't care. What I care about, this is just me, the cold-blooted basketball guy.
The former front office guy.
Marcellus Wiley likes, I know he ripped it off from someone else. I don't remember who, but he loves to trumpet this one. The best ability is availability.
Availability. I was going to steal it for myself.
Yeah. So Kyrie might be the most talented, the most, literally the most skilled player in the history of basketball. I say that with zero sarcasm. He is the most skilled player in the history of basketball in terms of being able to do everything, dribble, pass, shoot with either hand, anywhere from the floor. Mm. There's nobody in the history of this game who's as skilled as he is. Not LeBron,
Durant, heck of a
not Jordan, but I'm not going to call him the highest IQ player or the not highest IQ because he is a high IQ player. I'm going to call him the best decision maker on the court and off the court. I'm going to say he's unreliable. I can't count on him being there and being focused on the task at hand from night to night. And because of that, he is unreliable.
ESPN.
Oh, wow. That's a long answer. ESPN. Influential, powerful, maybe sometimes misguided or off track. Look, again, eight of the best years of my life, met so many great people, present company included, and it gave me a platform. And I was nobody. Nobody knew who I was, save maybe like Paul Coro, who was the beat writer for the Arizona Republic, covering the Phoenix Suns, and like Sam Amick, who was Paul Coro's best friend on the road. So I knew Sam through Paul. You know, a couple people here, Henry Abbott. There were a couple people here and there within the industry who knew who I was. But for the most part, nobody knew who I was. And ESPN made me someone that, you know, whenever restaurants and all that stuff is back, you know, a waiter might recognize who I am. So that influence and that power, that's not a little thing. And that's not something that I take for granted. But like I said earlier, when I was talking about the excitement of working with Dan and Skipper, is that when you're in the speedboat, changing direction is easy. We do that right now. When you're in the ocean liner, it's a little harder. And ESPN is an ocean liner.
No, ESPN's the Titanic. I mean, yeah, you're right. ESPN's the Titanic, and they run into the iceberg all the time.
Yeah, but they don't sink. They keep going.
That's true. So I was shocked after they got rid of me that it continued as a company, and it did. It was incredible. All right.
They managed.
The Republic survived. All right. Clay Travis.
Irrelevant. I mean.
I'm with you. There's going to be people listening to this going, who? Who? I'm not familiar. I don't know his work.
He has his audience, and he's got a big audience. and that's his audience. I don't think
he has, like, Whitlock and I have fallen out over this. I don't talk to Whitlock anymore, and it's because he joined that these people are awful. And I, you know, if it's like Breitbart Sports, and it's one thing to sort of have a counterintuitive take on something. It's another to just boldly go after the disenfranchised, angry white man's dollar. Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening there. And it doesn't have, this is the thing. I think anybody, like Whitlock used to say, oh, he's just entertainment. It's like Howard Stern. It's a different lane. Yeah. It's not when you actually convince people that the coronavirus is a hoax, or you think there's that's dangerous. And sadly enough, there's people who actually see whatever that Outkick thing is, whatever, that actually take your advice on that stuff. And some of them probably got sick, you idiot. And so that's where I draw the line.
So I'll give you a great example. I'm good friends with the comedian Andrew Schultz, who's got a great Netflix special right now. Mm-hmm. Andrew Schultz Saves the World, right? Andrew Schultz is a guy who will say the PC culture hasn't reached Schultz. He's making jokes that are not for everyone, right? In terms of not for every ethnicity, but not for those who are sensitive, right? And I always tell people, my friends who don't like, I don't like you guys said this. I'm like, he's a comedian, right? That's the joke, right? But when you are propagating things that are clearly just falsehoods, just because it gets you a certain level of notoriety or attention, I think that's a different level. And I think the biggest thing, and I don't know any of these people personally, but people who know Whitlock and people who have known Clay Travis in the past and people who knew Tommy Lahren in the past and a lot of these other people who barter.
The Deadspin guy.
No, Tommy Lahren is the young blonde woman who,
She's got a heck of a Twitter following now. Yeah.
Candace Owens.
Yeah.
And all these characters. Yeah. You know what always comes up when people from their past speak up?
Hmm.
Is that, oh no, these used to be the most fucking liberal motherfuckers. They're not doing this because of a sincere political belief.
Completely.
They're doing it because they found this.
It's a cash grab. And you found an audience.
And so at some point you have to ask yourself, is that like, what am I worth? Right. Yeah. What is my value? What lengths will I go to? Am I just making some jokes here?
Yeah.
Right. That are a little risque and maybe might offend some people, or am I mobilizing, inciting lunatics?
Yeah.
And when you talk about Clay Travis,
I was surprised he wasn't on video in the Capitol. That's all I'm saying.
But he wouldn't do it
because he was committed to it.
Because he's not really about that life.
No, he's
about it as long as it is a revenue generating scheme.
Totally, completely. All right. This was great. Last one, Baby Yoda. I have to ask you.
Grogu, you got a name
Grogu.
Now.
Yeah, Grogu.
Yeah, you know what's funny was
I think Grogu is bigger than regular Yoda, but that's just me.
Probably at this point, yeah, because again, you've got all these people who don't like would not even watch Star Wars.
Yeah, you're right.
Who are now advocates for this, but I'm gonna tell you this: when season two was starting, and we knew that the general premise was he's. You know, the quote from Mando, which is, you want me to deliver this child to a race of enemy sorcerers who were hell-bent on destroying us, right? It's like, oh, man, he's going to go find the Jedi. I said to Jason Jackson, my co-host on SiriusXM NBA Radio, I said, watch. He'll deliver him to Luke Skywalker. He'll enroll in Luke Skywalker's Academy for Gifted Youth. And then he's going to be the one that tells Kylo Ren, you know what? Luke is always giving you a hard time. You need to tell him to go. His fault.
If nobody has seen The Mandalorian, Amin Al-Hassan just spoiled it for you on my pocket, but that's fine because, oh my God, the last episode was better than the first The Attack of the Clones and the other movie. Okay. All right. All right, I got to get going. You've been unbelievable. I really congratulate you for taking a courageous professional step, and I wish you the best, man. You're working with great people, and everything's going to be, all the best to you, man. I look forward to the point where this thing dies down, where I can buy you food again in LA or wherever we are.
DC, I'm going to come to DC.
There we go.
I'm coming to DC.
You won't make it to the inauguration of Joseph Biden, but you will after that at some point.
I will. And you know what? I'll body glide my way in.
All right. Thanks, man. That was great.
That was dope.
Our biggest hope for 2021 is that the COVID vaccine is given to every person on the planet so we can snuff this pandemic out as soon as possible. But until that day arrives, please keep your guard up. Wear the mask in public to protect yourselves and others. Wash your hands, keep your distance, and just be considerate of others. And keep all the medical professionals in your prayers.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
Thanks to my guest, Amin Alhassan. Follow him on Twitter at Darth Amin. You gotta love the Star Wars reference. Bruce Bernstein has produced all 102 shows. Thank you, Bruce. Tom Phillip edits this show every week, and he makes all of us better. Please check out all of our Pure Hoops Media shows. Full Court with Jenny Fisher and Kara Kay has the best in college hoop each Tuesday. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto Strong and Aaron Berlin is here every Wednesday. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt and King McClure has a new pod every Thursday. And my friend BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman have the Pure Hoops podcast each Friday. Of course, the Mike Wise Show has a new episode every Monday. We also have a bunch of great segments you can check out on the Beer Hoops Media YouTube channel. Until next time, peace!
The Mike Wise Show used to be called the Wise Ass Show, but it remains a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.